I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
This week, we are taking a look at Disney's The Black Hole. This was Disney trying to mooch off the popularity of the recently released Star Wars. This came out 2 years after Star Wars did. Before Disney owned Star Wars, they tried to copy Star Wars because it was like the most popular movie ever in the history of the universe. Not the only ones, because like 79 brought a lot of sci-fi to the screen, to both the big screen and the small screen, because of the popularity of Star Wars. This year alone, we got the movies Alien and Star Trek the Motion Picture. On the television side, we got Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers. And across the pond over there, Doctor Who is getting a bit of a resurgence due to the new interest in science fiction. Tom Baker over there as a doctor. And a new sci-fi show over there called Blake 7. We've kind of mentioned all of that at one point in various episodes. But yeah, 1979 was like the big resurgence. You know, 77 was Star Wars. And then everyone went crazy over Star Wars. And every studio was like, we want our own Star Wars. So Disney decides we're going to make our own Star Wars. And this was their Star Wars.
It's going to have stars. It's going to have zero wars.
The Black Hole. I think they just thought, oh, we'll just do a movie in space. And that's why people like Star Wars. Because it's in space and there's robots. We can have a movie in space and have robots. That's about as much as these two movies have in common. There's a phrase that we've been using lately, and it's still true. The worst thing a movie can be is boring. Because you can have fun with a good movie. You can have fun with a bad movie. Mystery Science Theater made a career out of it. You cannot have fun with a boring movie. And if you're trying to make your movie to mooch off the popularity of Star Wars, you gotta have something interesting happen in this movie. And there's not a lot of exciting things that happen in this movie. It's just a bunch of people talking. Like, you can have this exact same movie, take away the sci-fi setting, put it on a battleship in the middle of the ocean or something, and it's the same movie.
I pointed out to you when I was watching it that Star Wars, you know, we're talking OG New Hope before it had that title. What is the first scene in that movie? It is a giant space battle. It is an Imperial Star Destroyer trying to blow up the courier ship that Princess Leia is on. It is big and bold and, you know, there's lots of fighting. We introduce our villain, like, right away. You know, we get that awesome scene with Vader coming in and intimidating Leia, and Leia being like, what? I'm just a envoy. I'm not doing nothing. I'm just a silly little princess, you know? There is a lot that happens before we get to the Tatooine slowdown. Of, like, Luke being like, I want to go off and do stuff. Tatooine's boring, you know? This movie starts out with like astronomical coordinates. It's just people talking about astronomical coordinates. It's like 3 minutes of dudes being like, go to the left 14 degrees, up Z axis 20 degrees. Like, you know, that's like the first like 3 minutes of this movie.
No. The first 3 minutes of this movie is a black screen with music.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because this year had basically the last big Hollywood movies that started with an overture. If you watch a lot of TCM or whatever, you'll notice that a lot of old movies started with an overture.
Like a stage musical would.
Yeah, well, and for much the same reason, is it's kind of your, like, hey, everybody get to your seats, because it was in the time before there was, like, 40 minutes of commercials and trailers.
Back then, the trailers were at the end of the movie. That's why they're called trailers.
Yeah. So there'd be a little overture to let people know, hey, the movie is starting soon. The overture has started. You better finish getting your popcorn and get to your seat. Now, that had kind of fallen out of favor by this point. So this year, 1979, was basically the last year that a big Hollywood movie would have that, and there were two movies that did that. This was one of them, and Star Trek the Motion Picture was another one. The overture bit for Star Trek the Motion Picture, it tends to be left out of basically everything, but when Black Hole went up on Disney Plus, they put the overture back in, which I find fascinating.
So it is going to be confusing for, again, it was confusing for me, because like, okay, is there something wrong with my device? Is there, because I'm hearing music, I'm not seeing a visual. I assume that the credits would be rolling at this point, but nothing's happening. Then I asked you if you were having the same problem, then you told me about the overture bit.
Yeah. And the thing is that the score to this movie is one of the few things that people seemed to like about this movie. This movie was one of Disney's biggest bombs.
Yeah, to this day, there are people who look at this and say, oh, why didn't Disney make a move, a ride based off of this movie? Because there are parts of this movie that would lend itself to a ride at a Disney park. To which I always say, Disney does not make rides based on bombs. We talked about this when we talked about Atlantis. They were all set to do an Atlantis ride, and then the movie bombed, and then they canceled those plans.
Yeah. The score for this film was done by John Barry. And if you don't know the name, you certainly know his work. He is the guy that wrote the James Bond theme.
Ooh.
Okay, but also, I mean, he was just an incredible composer and conductor, and so he had a massive career in Hollywood. That the James Bond theme is probably his most famous thing, but Disney really wanted him to do this score. And the historical thing about this score is that it was the first film score ever to be recorded completely digitally.
Hmm.
So the thing is that the score to this film, and I mean, honestly, watching the movie, the music slaps. It really does. The score is kind of incredible. I'm not saying that it's the greatest thing John Barry ever did, but it's still a John Barry score, and it's really good. It is way too good for the movie it is in. That is kind of the one thing when people talk about this movie and they're like, hey, what's the good points of this movie? It's the score.
Not that this movie didn't get any recognition. Again, it was a box office bomb, but it did get nominated for a few awards. Best cinematography, best visual effects at the Oscars, didn't win. And honestly, some of the visual effects probably wouldn't have, I wouldn't have nominated it. Again, granted, we're talking in 2024 of a seemingly digitally remastered version of the movie on Disney Plus, so you get to see all of the the green screen lines and all of that stuff. And we were talking about this off mic, that you could kind of see the wire work, and they didn't really do a good job of hiding it. 1979 projectors and screens, you wouldn't notice it. But a full digital restoration and a high-end TV, you're noticing it.
Okay, I'm just going to point this out. This is 1979, and yes, it's like, okay, we're looking at it from a 2024 perspective. But we did an episode on Alien, which came out in 1979. Did we have any problem with the special effects in Alien?
No.
No.
Even some of the special effects in the original Star Wars still hold up. The miniature work.
And I'm going to say it's mostly because they did a lot of practical effects in both Alien and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. At the original Star Wars before George Lucas lost his freaking mind. The black hole is mostly, it is so heavily dependent on some form of, like, I don't know if it's green screen or what, but they were trying to do, like, hey, we've got these kind of new computerized whatever, and we want to show it off. And that did not hold up.
Like, for example, take a look at the flying scenes. And yeah, I'm going to bring it up. Bring up the flying scenes in the original Superman, the movie. Which was what, the year before this?
Yeah, it would have been around that same time. Yeah. 78, yeah.
So Superman, the movie comes out the year before this. And that is, to this day, still lauded as great special effects. You can believe a man can fly. Now, granted, the special effects for Superman's 2 to 4, debatable. But the special effects for Superman 1 kind of still hold up. And they're trying to replicate that in here, and it just does not work. ILM, this is not.
It is just so bizarre to watch what is a movie that came out in the same year as some of the greatest sci-fi. And some not great sci-fi, but pretty decent sci-fi. Like, I don't think Star Trek the Motion Picture is anybody's favorite Star Trek movie. But it's decent sci-fi. Mm-hmm. You know, Alien is, like, one of the greatest movies ever made. Especially in the sci-fi genre. But just maybe, like, ever. And then you look at this movie, and what's so funny is they want to show weightlessness. And we've already talked about the wire work and that the wires are not hidden. You can see the wires in every single shot. It is hilarious. But the other thing they did is that when they weren't doing wire work, they had the actors just kind of bob. Like, bob and weave. So you can tell they're just standing on normal ground, but the actors just kind of move their bodies and bob and weave to be like, I am floating in space. This is what I'm doing. Yep, there's no gravity. I'm just floating here. And what's so funny is, like, half the time they forget to do it, there's, you know, the Star Trek shake from, like, the original series, and then they kind of kept it through all the other series.
Yeah.
And it would be like, oh no, we've got incoming torpedo fire. And then it would be like, everybody rock this way, everybody rock that way, you know? There's one scene where one of the actors, it might even be Anthony Perkins, I don't know, bless him, but one of the actors is reacting to something like that, you know, like something has hit the ship. And the thing is like, they had been shaking the camera to be like, oh no, this is also, and the actors are also throwing themselves around. And then there is a shot where they're like, okay, everything's over now. But, like, the one actor is still throwing himself around because he doesn't realize, like, the danger is over. And so the camera is now static, and everybody else is like, oh, yay, the threat has passed. And just, there's the one actor that's still doing the, like, oh, no, we're being hit by torpedoes move. And I laughed so hard at that, because I was like, that's what you kept in the movie. Like, you could,
we, that was the best take.
Take two.
Like, that was the best take you took that day.
Like, you couldn't have been like, dude, we're done now. You can stop throwing yourself around screen. Like,
and they try to do like VR visualization because they're all standing around a console and supposed to beam up a light that shows the other ship, rather than showing it on the screen like you would in Star Trek or Star Wars. And they're trying to make, and it kind of supposed to project in front of certain actors and behind certain actors, and some of the digital mapping isn't quite right, so some of the some of that digital mapping kind of goes over Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, that was really funny too. And I was like, did nobody look at this movie afterwards and be like, oh man, we screwed up? Like
this did not have the budget that it needed. It did not. And the thing is
it had a $20 million production budget in 1979.
Where's all that money go then? Did it go to Ernest Borgnine? He got a special credit in this thing.
I can forgive basically all of the stuff that we've talked about, but I cannot forgive the plot.
All right, so the plot of this movie is we have our crew, the crew of the Palomino, and their mission is to search space in search of life forms or find some habitable planets, report back to Earth. That's their mission, and they've been searching deep space, they haven't found anything, and they're about to call their mission and go home. When they see a long-lost ship called the Cygnus that had the same mission that they had, to search out deep space, find habitable worlds, report back to Earth. And it's been lost for so long, and they finally find it, and it's in sort of the eye of the storm of a black hole. The titular black hole of the movie.
Yeah, and I gotta say, like, when I saw how quickly this came up, all I could think of was, like, a particular bit from Red Dwarf. Where, because the thing is like they're just tooling through space and then they're like, uh-oh, black hole. Didn't see that coming. And there's a whole bit in Red Dwarf about how, like, you know, black holes are kind of difficult to spot.
But a black hole is a huge impacted star. It's millions of miles wide. It's massive. Why didn't you see anything on the radar screen?
Well, the thing about a black hole, its main distinguishing feature, is it's black. And the thing about space, the color of space, your basic space color, is it's black. So how are you supposed to see them?
So I laughed so hard when it was just like, oh wait, there's a black hole there. We didn't see that coming. And I was like, didn't they do that joke on Red Dwarf?
Yeah, and they kind of make jokes. Oh, I was expecting to look into a black hole and see Satan there.
Well, the thing is they're not joking. That's the weird thing, is that this whole movie is like, it wants you to think that the black hole is like the greatest, scariest thing in the entire universe. Like, which, yes, black holes are very interesting and mysterious as far as like astronomical phenomenon, you know? It's like when we think about the cosmos and whatever, black holes are extremely mysterious and we don't actually know what goes on inside them. We have a lot of theories of what would happen if you passed through one, but you know. So the thing is that they don't talk like scientists or spacefarers. Like, yes, you would not want to get caught in the gravity well of a black hole if you're on a spaceship. However, we have, and honestly, even in the 70s, we had the ability to detect black holes from far away. So the idea that they'd just be tooling around and be like, uh-oh, black hole, we didn't see that coming, it popped up out of nowhere, is kind of weird because, you know, black holes are formed by collapsing stars, and that doesn't just suddenly happen, you know? So they should have known it was coming, you know? This should have been a thing that they would have plotted, because it's not like black holes just randomly appear or move about the galaxy. And also, the other weird thing about it is that they're acting like this is some evil that has suddenly just dropped upon them. Like, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of religious tones in this movie,
which is so bizarre. Were you expecting that?
No. Like I said, you know, Ernest Borgnine's character expects to see Satan's face in the black hole. Like, as a joke, that makes sense. You're, you know, someone could joke about that, but they're being serious. Like, in Star Wars, they just made up their own religion in the Jedi. That was just made up for the movie. Now, granted, people have taken that and made it the thing in real life, and sure. But to take Christian beliefs and apply that to science fiction, as black holes being portals, literal portals to hell.
Or possibly to heaven.
Yeah. You don't expect that from a Disney movie. But well, then again, this is the Ron Miller era. And we talked about Ron Miller before, how he tried to turn Disney kind of, how Ron Miller tried to push Disney to do more movies for a teenage and adult audience because seeing kids' movies was considered uncool. You know, there's a point where you grow out of it, and they were losing money on that, and et cetera. Like, we've talked about that to death on a lot of these episodes. So to take that religious aspect and apply it to science fiction is so un-Disney-like that you don't. This feels weird and out of place coming into this movie cold.
Yeah. The thing about it is that, you know, like I said, this was Disney trying to capitalize on Star Wars and, you know, all the other science fiction stuff. And it's just so interminably boring in a way that I cannot forgive. Because here's the thing is, you get the feeling that it kind of wants to be a little 2001.
Yeah, especially towards the end.
But at the beginning, too, because you do get the feeling that it wants to be slightly philosophical in the way it treats the science fiction subject matter.
Yeah.
Because 2001 is very much a philosophical movie about the evolution of humanity. And this is more, I think they were trying to go for philosophical things on religion and the soul, and, you know, there's the whole thing with the zombie robot people, but they still have a little bit of their humanity left because they still mourn their dead and stuff like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what they were going for. I mean, they screwed it up massively. Mm-hmm. It does not land at all. But I think that's what they were going for. But the problem is that I don't know if they leaned into it too much or too little, but they did a little. They did too something.
Too middle of the road.
Maybe. I don't know. It's a very confusing movie to try to figure out what their angle was. Because they're trying to put forward, you know, like, okay, so we find the Cygnus and the woman, because there's only one. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, my father was on that ship. Let's go see if my father is still alive. It's been 20 years.
And she can feel life signs on the ship because she's psychic.
Yeah, she's got ESP, and for some reason that works with robots. Make that make sense.
Do robots have souls in this world, in this movie?
Well, the thing is that the according to, like, the robots, like the Vincent and whatever.
Vincent and Bob?
Yeah, Vincent and Bob, they don't seem to think so. Because they're confused by the humanoid robots, which are really just lobotomized humans. You know, they're not really so much robots. They're just lobotomized humans.
They're cyborgs.
Yeah, they're a little bit cyborgs. But the actual robots that we start with, Vincent and then later Bob, they do seem to think there is a difference between themselves and the other ones as far as a soul, I guess.
We're not obsolete. We're the best.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, at the end of the movie, there's that thing where, like, the bad guy and the robot merge together in hell. Yeah. So, like, did that robot have a soul? Because we're not told that that was a person. Like, we don't know what the Maximilian robot is.
It's I mean, the movie doesn't know whether Maximilian is independent or not. Is Maximilian doing things out of its own independent thinking? Or is he doing things because Reinhardt is telling him to do things? And even Reinhardt is saying, I didn't tell you to do that.
And at one point, Reinhardt is like, save me from Maximilian. You know?
Yeah.
Which is weird. I wanted at one point for it to be like that Maximilian had the brain of the woman's dad, because he was the one that led the mutiny against Reinhardt that made Reinhardt turn everybody into robots. But it does seem that, like, her dad just got, like, killed.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't get turned in. But I thought it would make Maximilian, like, make sense, at least.
And you could probably explain that 20 years in a robot shell made him insane or something.
But also why he's constantly, like,
fighting Reinhardt.
Going against Reinhardt. You know?
Mm.
That would have been, and then, you know, you could have had the whole thing with the woman being like, oh no, my father, I must save him from the, you know, whatever. And then, like, maybe Maximilian could have saved her or something. You know, I don't know.
I'm just watching this movie and I'm just thinking, what's Norman Bates doing here?
Yeah, I mean, this is Anthony Perkins here as, like, the captain of the ship. You will know him best as Norman Bates, the OG.
Mm-hmm.
He has the dumbest death in a movie, maybe, because Maximilian comes at him with, like, these, you know, his little, like, blender hands. And Anthony Perkins holds up, like, a stack of papers to defend himself. My dude, what did you think that was going to do?
Scissors beats paper. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
And he was joining with Reinhardt. He was going to mutiny against his own crew, saying, I'm going to join Reinhardt and go with his plan. Okay, quick. His plan is, I'm going to go into the black hole to see what's on the other side of it. It has taken him 20 years to plan to the millisecond of going into the black hole, surviving travel through the black hole, and exit out the other side. And Anthony Perkins' character said, yeah, that sounds really great. I'm going to do that with you because I also want to see what's on the other side of a black hole. And he dies.
Yeah, the thing is that the bad guy in here, I don't know.
Is Reinhardt the bad guy or is Maximilian the bad guy?
Well, Reinhardt is because he, like, killed everybody and turned them into zombie robots. I mean, that's definitely, like, yeah.
Right.
But the thing is that you have a feeling like all of this could have been fixed. Like, just be like, okay, dude, we're gonna put you in this, like, probe or whatever, because they had that probe. Like, just put him in the probe and shoot him through the black hole. That's what he wants. He was taking over the ship. The ship was told to go back to Earth. Like, your mission is over. Come back to Earth. And the rest of the crew was like, yay, we get to go home and see our family. And Reinhardt was like, no, we found a black hole. I want to go through it and see what's on the other side. Like, just put that dude in an escape pod and shoot him through the black hole. But like, he gets what he wants and everybody else gets to go home.
It took him 20 years to do modifications to the ship to survive travel through a black hole. So even if he was put in an escape pod and shot through, it doesn't have the modifications that he would need to survive.
But the thing is that we see at the end of the movie, the only thing that makes you survive the black hole is whether or not you're a good person.
Yeah.
So, like, he was never going to survive the black hole anyway, because apparently the black hole is, like, the judgment of God.
It's quite... To take a phrase from another movie we've reviewed, it's quite literally the devil's anus.
Yeah, I mean... The thing is, like... Skipping ahead, because there is nothing to this freaking movie.
The first hour is just talking. The action doesn't happen until... the last half hour of this movie.
I mean, there's like a couple of scenes of like robots doing target practice with laser beams, but it doesn't actually give anything to the movie. It's just there to be like, okay, the audience is probably falling asleep now. Let's put some pew pew in it.
And let's do some funny robot stick.
Honestly, here's the funny thing. You were talking about, like, all the awards and stuff that it got nominated for. One of the things that it got nominated for was the Stinker's Bad Movie Award for Most Annoying Non-Human Character for Vincent and for Bob. And the thing is I'm sorry, but those are the two best characters in the movie. Especially Vincent, who is voiced by Roddy McDowall.
Uncredited.
And Bob, voiced by Slim Pickens, also uncredited. Honestly, they're the best part of the movie, because it's the only part of the movie that doesn't bore you to tears.
So we have the captain of the robots, Captain Star, who was the top shooter on the ship. And he has a bit of a rivalry with Bob, because Bob beat him at a shooting range, and that's why Bob is, like, half-destroyed, and the reason it's half-destroyed is because Star is a sore loser.
Yeah, and honestly, this has absolutely nothing to do with the plot of the movie. I mean, let's just be honest with ourselves. It has nothing to do with the plot of the movie.
No. And then Vincent tries to defend Bob's honor by also beating Star in the shooting range and kills Captain Star.
And once again, this has nothing to do with the plot of the movie.
Like, we get... And it's one of the first times where we see that these robots are more than just mechanical. Because Star is gloating, he's doing trick shots, he's laughing.
Yeah, the laughter is really creepy.
Tom McLaughlin plays Captain Star. Not really known as an actor. He's a director.
Speaking of directors, the director of this movie is the guy that you see when Yvette Mimieux, Dr. Kate, is like, oh, I've just got a psychic transmission from the robot. It turns out that all of these humanoid robots aren't actually robots. They're the dead crew, lobotomized crew, and whatever. And Anthony Perkins is like, oh, let me take the face mask off one of them. And there's, like, the zombie dude, like, just sitting there underneath it. That's actually the director of the movie.
Hey, it's one way to get yourself in the movie.
Yeah. Speaking of the woman and Yvette Mimieux, this is the funniest thing in the world to me, because the original person that was supposed to be the woman in this movie, Sigourney Weaver, Sigourney Weaver was supposed to be in this movie, and the casting director rejected her because he thought her name was too weird.
Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney. Who's named Sigourney? So he went with Yvette Mimou.
Because Yvette Sigourney. And then, of course, she goes on to do Alien the same year this movie comes out, and she becomes a really huge star.
And also, Alien becomes, like, one of the biggest grossing movies of, like, the decade. So, yeah, maybe casting directors need to cast on, like, who's best for the part and not if you like their name or not. I mean, and nothing against Yvette Mimou. She's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's hilarious. This is one of the times when I don't want to be living in the alternate universe. We got the correct universe on this one. I can't imagine anyone else as Ellen Ripley.
That's true.
Like, Sigourney Weaver is the only person that could have done that part justice. So, yes, I'm glad she was rejected from this film.
Oh, imagine what her career would have been like if she had done this. She probably would not have been in Ghostbusters.
I mean, she probably would have never been in anything ever again.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie was such a flop. So, yeah. So, the bad guy just wants to go into the black hole and see what's there. And, as we've said before, what's there is, like, either heaven or hell, depending on what type of person you are. Because due to, you know, the ship kind of getting blown up.
There's a meteor shower.
Yeah, there's a meteor shower. And also some of the, you know, Ernest Borgnine tries to escape and ends up crashing his ship, well, the Palomino, into the Cygnus. And, yeah. So, yeah, the Cygnus is pretty much destroyed. And our last few survivors from the Palomino have to get into the probe that Reinhardt had been using to, you know, do experiments on the black hole. And they were like, well, our only chance is to go through the black hole and hope we survive.
Because the probe already has pre-programmed coordinates. You know, they try to escape, and they keep getting sucked further and further into the hole, and they find out that the ship's navigating computer has been pre-programmed to go through the black hole.
Yeah, they were like, okay, well, we're screwed. We've got to do this anyway. So they all hold hands and accept their fate and, you know, whatever. But the thing is that, so Reinhardt and Maximilian and all of the robots and whatever, the humanoid lobotomized zombie bots, they all get sucked in on the Cygnus and they all end up in hell. And it does seem to be a pretty literal hell, like actual fire. And somehow Reinhardt and Maximilian literally merge together. Like, Reinhardt ends up inside the Maximilian robot skeleton.
Maximilian's visor changes, and then you see Reinhardt's eyes through the visor.
And now he is, like, the Lord of Hell or something. And all of the zombie robots are now in hell with him.
Yeah, you see them marching around hell like they're his army. And Nick. Okay, Reinhardt going to hell, I get. He killed the entire crew. You want to put Maximilian in hell and his punishment for eternal damnation is living eternity as a robot? Fine. What did these other people do?
They were in the wrong time, yeah.
And their punishment for being in the wrong place at the wrong time is eternal damnation.
I mean, the thing is that if we're going off of Dante's Inferno, which this does seem to be drawing a lot from.
They name drop it.
Well, yeah. And there is a circle of hell that is for, like, traitors and mutineers and stuff. So Maybe they're there because they were mutineers, whether or not they were justified.
Maybe.
But that is, I feel, me giving this movie too much credit.
Like, their free will was taken from them. Anything that they did...
Well, no, they committed the mutiny before that.
But what I mean is that any atrocities that they committed after Reinhardt converted them was not their choice. They had their free will taken from them. Yes, they mutinied, but they were mutinied because they wanted to go home. Their mission was over, and their leader was saying, no, we're staying here because I want to do the thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't sit right with me. They were punished for no reason, if this is the literal hell.
Yeah, and if those are the actual, like, you know, the crew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might could just say, like, he's surrounded by demons or whatever that look like...
And this
like
just,
the...
yeah, coincidentally looks like these robots.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of up to interpretation because the movie just decides to go all, like, weird and philosophical at the end.
Like, the last 5 minutes of this movie, there's no dialogue. It's like they go through the black hole, you get snippets of dialogue from earlier in the movie with different characters, and then as soon as they go through the black hole, there's no dialogue.
Again, very 2001.
Yeah.
But... the thing is that the probe with our heroes on it, they end up flying through heaven.
Yeah, after Hell Planet, we go up into the sky through a chapel door.
Yeah, down a crystal cathedral hallway.
With angels. And then there's our crew... still in the probe, flying towards this white star.
With a planet.
Yeah.
Is it Earth? Is it like just another habitable planet? Is it actual heaven?
If it's this actual heaven, that means Vincent the Robot is going to heaven.
I mean, I'm okay with it. He was the best character in the movie.
Yeah.
And Bob is dead by this point, so...
Yeah, poor Bob. Poor Bob got abused in this movie. All because he was a better shot.
Yeah.
It feels like they're trying to do philosophical messaging here of heaven and hell and being a good person and being a bad person. And I texted you after watching the movie, it's like, sequel bait ? For a sequel that will never come?
I don't think it was a sequel bait. I think it was them trying to be philosophical. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could have come back and been like, where did the people from the black hole end up, you know?
I mean, there is the idea that they could kind of continue, if this movie was successful, a whole new universe on the other side of the black hole. It's just that Reinhardt and Maximilian ended up on a hell planet. Now they rule that, and they're going on to the, and our crew's going on to the good planet. I don't know. ?
But there would never be a sequel because this was a flop.
Yeah.
Although, weirdly, they wanted to, like, remake this movie, and I don't know why.
Yeah, okay. So, there was talk in, like, 2009 of a remake of this movie. But I'm pretty sure, 99% sure, that the purchase of Lucasfilm killed all that.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing is that they were still planning it, apparently, even after the purchase of Lucasfilm. Because apparently what really killed it is that they had a script and they were planning on trying to do it. And then Christopher Nolan came out with Interstellar. And they were like, oh, we basically wrote the exact same script.
Ah. Because there was that, I mean, they did Tron Legacy, so I'm guessing that they were trying to do a lot of their 70s, 80s sci-fi movies, giving them sequels 30 years later.
Yeah, but the thing about Tron Legacy is that Tron was kind of, like, good. I mean, at least it wasn't boring.
Yeah. But this movie, two-thirds of this movie is boring. Like I said, the most exciting things about this movie have nothing to do with the plot. Like I said, there's a shot with the robots doing trick shots. And then the only action is the last few minutes where the meteor shower comes in and the ship breaks apart and they're trying to race and they go through the black hole. Like, there should have been more here. Like, you want to rival Star Wars? Rival Star Wars.
Give me a Wars.
Like, again, like I mentioned, Battlestar Galactica was on television doing this. Buck Rogers was on television doing this. Now, granted, the first episode of each of those shows were shown in theaters. And again, say what you will about Star Trek the Motion Picture, there was at least conflict in that movie.
I mean, it was a boring movie, but it wasn't as boring as this movie.
Yeah, like, nothing happens. Nothing. That, like I said, the worst thing a movie can be is boring, and that's what this movie was. Boring. It's like they watched Star Wars, got all of the wrong lessons from watching Star Wars, and trying to make their own Star Wars.
We'll make our own Star Wars with no blackjack, no hookers, no plot.
People want to talk about, oh, Disney ruined Star Wars. This was it. If I don't say what you will about the sequel, say what you will about any Disney Star Wars project, none of them are as bad as the black hole. None of them are boring like the black hole. I dare you. Listener, if you're someone who does not like Disney Star Wars, watch the black hole, then come back.
Yeah, you will absolutely be like, no, Disney Star Wars is really good now. This exactly. is what we could have had.
Like, when this movie came out, they were heavily pushing Vincent as a toy. Disney was doing Vincent toys. Even now, there is still, for some freaking reason, there's nostalgia for this movie. There's a cult, this is considered a cult classic to the point where they are making Vincent toys now for the black hole, for the collector's market. So, like, someone has nostalgia for this movie. There's a market to take the robots from this movie and sell them to people. Again, I'm not going to yuck your yum if that's your bag, but why?
Well, like I said, best character in the movie. I kind of had a soft spot for Vincent. But, you know, it's like one good character in the middle of a really boring movie.
If you have nostalgia for this movie, I'd like to hear your argument on that. Is it just Bob? Is it just Vincent? Maybe you think Maximilian is a really cool design. I don't know. That's the only thing I think of is that you thought the robots looked cute. Or they look cool. Or something. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I hope Ernest Borgnine got paid a lot of money for this movie. I hope Anthony Perkins got paid a lot of money for this movie. I hope Maximilian Schell got paid a lot of money for this movie. We didn't mention the actor by name. He plays Reinhardt. It's funny because his robot is also named Maximilian. I hope all of the actors in this movie got paid well. And I hope they're still getting residuals. I hope their families are getting residuals. Because I can't see any other positives for this movie. I'm just, you know, I'll ride Space Mountain with its own soundtrack. I don't need it to be a black hole ride. Like I said, there's that part at the end where they're in the pod and they're racing down that could be a great coaster or something. And it kind of did give me a little bit of Space Mountain there. But I'm glad that it's Space Mountain is staying Space Mountain and not the black hole ride.
Yeah. Me too.
So, does this movie have the magic? No. No, no.
No, no. Goodness, no.
No, no. This movie is boring. This movie is... We've wanted to do this for a while because we wanted to see what Disney did before they bought Star Wars. And I'm glad they bought Star Wars because Disney Star Wars is a million times better than what the Black Hole is.
Agreed.
Yeah. Speaking of, next week is our... Not our May the 4th episode. It will be our Revenge of the 6th episode. We're actually going to talk about Disney Star Wars. We're going to talk about Solo, a Star Wars adventure, the origin story of Han Solo. And a movie that made Kiki question her sanity because she thought Darth Maul was dead.
Yeah.
So come back next week for Solo. May the Force be with you. Watch something good. Come back next week for Solo. May the Force be with you, and we will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here. Join our conversations on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Rewatching the Magic. We are on the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rewatch the Magic. And new episodes are available every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.
Podcasts are fun,
but there's work to be done.
We encourage you to get involved. Here are some organizations we support.
The American Civil Liberties Union fights for the constitutional rights of all Americans. Find them at ACLU.org.
The National Network of Abortion Funds helps people find access to safe abortion services. Their site is abortionfunds.org.
The Trevor Project provides a 24/7 crisis helpline for LGBTQ youth and education services for schools on LGBTQ issues. They can be found at thetrevorproject.org.
Or find a way to help in your area.